It's called Incivility, the land of jerks and louts, boorish behavior in the political realm. And we're going to talk about incivility in podcast 770, Incivility, Emerging American Idiocracy, the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 770. So I'm going to talk about a lot of issues that are current in the United States right now. One of them is privacy. And if you're concerned about your privacy, then I'm going to recommend a book called Big Brother in the Exam Room, written by Twyla Braze. This book is something that you're going to want to get, especially after you hear Twyla talk about this. And I'll tell you how to get Big Brother in the Exam Room in a second, but I want you to hear Twyla Braze, who is with the Citizens Council on Health Freedom. Trust me, when you hear what she has to say about the computers in the doctor's office and the hospital and the records they keep that you think are confidential and the fact that your doctor's back is most often to you because they are asking questions from the computer, you're going to want this book. It's really important. Here's Twyla.
Patient privacy is what patients need in order to have a sense of safety. They have to be free to have a frank discussion with their doctor, even though it's embarrassing, even though it could be demeaning, even though it's something they would never want to tell someone, but it's the only way that they're going to get the care that they need. The federal government has dismantled privacy through something called HIPAA. And a lot of people think that HIPAA protects their privacy, but HIPAA actually opened up everyone's medical records, and the federal government lists a number of 2.2 million entities that could have access to their medical records if those who have the data decide to share it. There is being built a national medical record system where all of the electronic health records that are sitting at the bedside and in the exam room will be hooked into it. And the CDC, the federal government, has said that they're going to reach into the cloud to find information buried deep. They're going to find perhaps parts of conversations, diagnoses, tests that were done. They're going to find out about relationships and indiscretions and whatever might be there in your electronic medical record is going to be available to outsiders without your consent because of HIPAA. Congress mandated use of this government-designed electronic health record that is designed to do what the government wants it to do, not what it needs to do for the patient and the doctor. I wrote the book, Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records, so that the American public would understand that what that machine is in the exam room is a surveillance tool, as well as a command and control infrastructure through which every doctor's decisions are tracked and controlled.
Get Big Brother in the Exam Room now at cchfreedom.org or click on that banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, the Big Brother in the Exam Room banner. That takes you to the page at cchfreedom.org, where you can get the book and find out what else they're doing. Well, I've told you I hate my printer. What I really hate are the big box retailers that charge an arm and a leg for laser print cartridges. Let me tell you about Cartridge World in Maple Grove because they can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores. And so I love Cartridge World. Cartridge World cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. I'll tell you what, man. Everything that I printed today on the new Cartridge World cartridge is better. It looks better. It's darker, you know, than on the actual cartridge that came from the manufacturer, which is, you know, $125. Ah! Free delivery on qualifying orders. It doesn't get much better than that. Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway. 763-420-6632. Ask for Jason. Jason's a good guy, and you don't have to talk about print cartridges. He'll talk about anything. Or you can click on the Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Well, I don't really like this topic. And I don't know whether it's because it's a moving topic and it's hard to a moving target and it's hard to get a bead on it. It's hard to get it where you know you got it, and I hate that, you know. Because the other thing is, and here's why, because incivility is a very partisan topic. You know, when you start talking about incivility, then you're going to people automatically take sides. And I don't like those kinds of topics because they don't advance the story. But we have a problem right now because we have a lot of things happening that are chaotic. We have a lot of people that are talking about civil war, which irritates the hell out of me. We have people advocating violence in the political realm, which I think is extremely dangerous as a way to get their way or to make their point. We have the criminalization of politics, as it's called, with investigations, continuing investigations that have no end and really not getting to the bottom of anything. And then people don't understand the legal system and they don't understand how law is made. They don't understand the rules of the legislature and on and on and on. And it's – I can't unpack all that in one podcast. But people know what I'm talking about. Now, when you're on the side that's doing that, well, you defend it because that's the way partisanship works. So if you're hearing it and you're thinking, well, how dare you say that, you know, Democrats are criminalizing the people, the public officials, they deserve to be criminalized and yada, yada, yada. You know, you're going to have to put that stuff aside or turn this off because I don't think there's any way to do this without offending everyone. So I guess I'm just going to offend everyone in this podcast. So if you have headphones on, you can hear the planes landing. That always irritates me, and that's probably one of the reasons that I'm irritated. But anyway, we're going to start out with the big question, which is, and I think this is the central question of this, and I thought about this today, and actually this ought to be the podcast, but it isn't. And that is whether or not we as Americans could recreate the U.S. Constitution 260 years later with a constitutional convention and everything else that would actually uphold, improve, and be a superpower nation based on personal freedom and constitutional order, and the order of law and order, basically the order of the constitutional process. I don't think we could. Earlier I wasn't going to answer that question, but I think the idea of a constitutional convention is completely absurd because I think Americans would be lost because we are without the philosophy that would allow us to – we would end up with some sort of bizarre combination of Marxism and democratic socialism and democracy, which would very quickly devolve into – a banana republic, to be quite honest with you, in my personal opinion, because I don't think we have the skills and the knowledge to be able to do what our quote-unquote forefathers did. We are the only superpower based on personal freedom and constitutional order. Many people think that those values are disappearing. One of the first things they used to teach us in school is this idea about the election process in the United States featuring something called the orderly transfer of power. This is when one party gives way to the other after elections are certified. The often partisan legislative process in states and at the federal government might often include strong opinions and displays of emotion and even fights at times. But at the end of the day, the legislatures, for the most part, remain collegial most of the time through our history. These days, though, politics, again, as I said before, is really marked more by the unwillingness of one side to let the election go and start working on the next. What we have are open attacks, investigations that criminalize politics and politicians and seem to be directed to destroying public officials either in the public space, the media, or for real. And they seem to be directed towards refusing to let the opposing side speak. There are violent demonstrations. There are public officials being accosted in restaurants and everything else. And then that's actually being promoted as the right thing to do by one side of the political spectrum these days. And there are people who have actually been shot who are politicians. People have been run over. People are blocking traffic. Riot has become an acceptable tool of discourse. And, you know, it's dangerous, in my opinion. And all the demands seem to be tear it down. Get rid of these guys. Put our guys in. And it's all couched in the language of democracy, but it's not democracy. It's somebody else is destroying our democracy. This is destroying our democracy. This is yada, 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 democracy, democracy, democracy. the hallmarks of arguing are conspiracy theory, stuff based on social media news and videos, stuff based on things and snippets that you pulled from watching news for 5 or 10 minutes at one point during the day, inflammatory remarks and behavior, screaming and yelling, and demands that your point of view be heard and the other guy's point of view be suppressed. Those are called safe spaces. You know, everybody knows what I'm talking about. And there is a lot I object to politically on both sides of the quote unquote, both sides of the political spectrum. If there is another part of this, if there is a full spectrum of political thought in this country, people call themselves conservatives, progressives, and liberals. Those terms are very hard to run down in terms of what they mean. I read an article today about some guy who is supposedly one of the fathers of, quote, conservatism today, and it was a convoluted nonsense article about how this guy was this amazing philosopher, and yet he couldn't say what conservatism actually stood for or didn't stand for throughout the entire article. It was awful. None of this started with President Trump and his victory in 2016, and it probably won't end when he departs the White House either in 2021 or after a second term. Now, almost all of us have either said or heard somebody say, I can't deal with this political nonsense anymore, because people get so upset about it, because the minute you disagree, they have a fit. And for this reason, this is why I said artists need to be careful, because you're alienating one half of your potential audience, especially young artists, especially artists starting out, especially local artists, comedians, you know, stuff like that. We don't have sources for what we are arguing about. We actually don't spend time examining information and making what somebody might consider an informed choice. If you're with people who think a certain way, you end up having to fight through a thicket of half-truths and outright lies or confusion, trying to figure out where they heard this or where they heard that and what the thread is, and looking it up and saying, no, that's not what that is, or that's, I understand what you're saying. And it's just almost impossible. Was it always this way? We have been given the impression that this is how American discourse has gone on forever, that this is American politics. To a certain extent, I suppose that's true. This question of whether the political environment was poisoned, as poisoned in different eras in this country's political history. Certainly things were pretty bad in the 60s, particularly with the Vietnam War and civil rights, and during the Depression. Also, after World War I, when collectivist ideas emerged from immigrants from Europe, when Marx became really popular and socialism was discussed as a remedy to the excesses of the earlier Industrial Revolution, and during the Civil War in the United States, when many, many people simply died for their political viewpoints and we went at each other, and it was very bad. And this is why I really don't like this talk about American Civil War or a second Civil War. And everybody's writing books that they want to have that title because it's clickbait. It's really dangerous, because that was an extremely bloody war. And I'm going to come back to this a little bit later on. And of course, we had a lot of political disputes in the early Republic during the Jackson presidency. The dirtiest election in history is probably, what was it, the 1804 presidential election. We don't know how it was then, because we didn't live in those time periods. You know, certainly if you were alive during the Vietnam War era, it kind of peaked with the shooting at Kent State. There were bombings, there were riots in the street, there was a lot of unrest during that period of time, and from about 63, 64, all the way up through 73, 74. And after, you know, four students were killed by the National Guard at Kent State, God knows why they had live ammunition, people kind of realized that it had gone too far. And why? Because we couldn't get out of Vietnam, and people were dying, and young people were really upset about it. We can read history, but history unfolds for us because you know what the outcome is going to be because you know history, or even if you know little bits of history, you know what's going to happen. It's like a movie you've seen before. So it's easy to look at things in retrospect and say, this is the way it should be, or this is the way it'll roll because history has this orderly kind of march when you're reading history. But when you're living history, you don't necessarily know that you're living history. Well, I hate to bring this up, but it's true. What do you do if you're injured, whether it's at work or at play? And I will discuss work for the time being. So if you get hurt at work and you're out of work because you got hurt at work, how do you handle the insurance and workers' comp claims by your, do you do it by yourself or do you get somebody that knows what they're doing? I'm going to make a recommendation, and that is John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates, because the one thing I've learned from talking to John is that this is a thicket and you could possibly screw it up. And John is meticulous. He's concerned about his clients getting what is due to them. And he is the kind of person that isn't going to force you to go into court if he can get the job done through his meticulous attention to detail. John is a great personal injury lawyer. He's really helped a lot of people. You know, one of the stories he tells is about one of his clients who was a 50, 60-year-old woman who was traveling in a rent-a-car for her business and was in an accident. And she just didn't know what to do with it. And she had some pretty serious injuries. John got her life back for, and I think that's probably the most important thing. Thing is, accidents come out of nowhere. You don't think about people like John Scott unless you need them. So put this number away, 612-963-4629. That's 612-963-4629. Yes, accidents usually come without any warning, especially when you're having fun or working. John D. Scott can help you make sure you get the help you need. Again, you can call John D. Scott at Hoffman, Hamer & Associates, 612-963-4629, 612-963-4629, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, which takes you to jdsinjurylaw.com. There is a contact page there for you to share the details of your problem with John D. Scott, personal injury attorney at Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. Couple of points of order. Our country, the United States, is not a democracy. Technically, it's a democratic republic, but even that doesn't describe what we have. A republic, a democratic republic, can be any state in which the head of state is not a monarch. For our purposes, the people of the United States are the sovereign. We don't have a king. We don't have a state which we consider to be sovereign. We, the people, are the sovereign of the United States. And we delegate our authority to representatives that we elect to run the government for us so we can do more important things like live. And I added the do more important things. But that's the idea that, you know, we find people to run things for us so we don't have to. We are a representative republic. Now, the media likes to call the United States a democratic republic, which refers to democratic methods for selecting leaders. It has a way of equalizing really an incredible system as it was originally constructed, which differs from Norway and Sweden and England and Germany and so forth, in that the people are the sovereign. The philosophy that created our government made the people the sovereign, not the government. And that's an important distinction. Beyond that, our representative republic is unique because the power of the government exists within predefined limits established by a written constitution. And then, of course, the actual construction of the constitution, what it says and everything, is based on the idea of countervailing institutions of government as part of the limits of the power of government. And most people forget that. And most people think if you want to talk about the Constitution that you're a right-wing crazy person. Most people, I think, couldn't tell you what the Constitution says. And a lot of people think it's just, you know, this old document that doesn't matter anymore and that we really don't follow anyway. But, you know, we have this system that has all three branches of government supposedly equal in power but engaged in unique responsibilities. One runs the government, one makes the laws and raises the money and does all the actual work, and then one kind of decides whether the laws are constitutional or adjudicates problems in what this means and what that means. The president executes the laws and runs the executive departments and represents all the people. The courts are supposed to interpret the law. And then, of course, Congress represents districts and states. Divided or limited power is a very delicate balance. And the federal government in the United States has a very limited power. The state governments are also representative republics with defined powers. So we have very stable governments. We have a very stable federal government with differences of responsibility between the federal government and the state governments, or at least that's the way it's supposed to work, and very well defined individual rights for the sovereign, the people. So the way it works is popular issues take a long time to reach the point where they will be dealt with by legislatures. It took almost 100 years to address slavery, which really was an issue from the get-go. Courts get involved. Politicians run for office on these issues. Ideas can be presented, laws enacted, then you struck down, enacted, reenacted, repealed, and so on. And you know, if you kind of collapse 260 plus years of the American Republic, you know, you'd see things going back and forth. If you ran the film fast forward, you'd see things being changed back, changed again, all sorts of things happening. And so what we have here is an awful lot of moss on the tree of liberty in the United States. Things have happened that don't make sense. Lots of disagreement and revisions concerning what happened before and why, whether someone or something was a good idea or not. My favorite period of U.S. history is probably the Civil War, because that's the period that is when the old republic died. If you were Tacitus writing about the end of the American Republic, one might argue that the Republic ended in 1860 with the advent of, you know, the departure of the Southern states and the things that Lincoln had to do to, quote unquote, preserve the Republic. What we have and have is the fear of the mob. That is what our founders feared the most, an uncontrolled crowd of louts burning and beating and forcing the will of the majority onto the minority through bullish, violent acts and speeches. This is why Washington felt very strongly about putting down the Whiskey Rebellion. This is why they have taken pretty significant steps over the years to put down rebellions and, you know, maintain order in this country, whether you are the kind of person that agrees with it or disagrees with it. Today, you have a lot of irresponsible people cranking out videos, commentary, and talking a lot these days about civil war and the end of government, and government doesn't do this and government doesn't do that. A lot of it's propaganda designed to erode the American faith in its government, and I think that's a problem. And I haven't, you know, it's funny because you have to look it up, and if you look it up, it's there, you know, that the American people are the sovereign. I don't think anybody even knows what that means. I don't even think anybody even knows about or what the philosophical progression that brought that into being. They couldn't give you the philosophical progression of that concept of the sovereign going from the monarch to the government to the individual and to the people collectively. And I think it is one of the greatest follies of our time these days because of a civil war. If you know anything about history, you don't even want to hint that where we're at now ends up in some kind of a civil war. It would be outrageously destructive, and they are not, simply not ever going to let it happen. And so this idea that authors and talk show hosts and everybody else are, you know, touting this idea that we're going to have a civil war is really, really, really irresponsible. You know, I defend their right to say whatever they want, but they're idiots. And people who follow them are idiots, because anybody will tell you, like, for example, divorced couples will tell you that when the D word comes up, it spreads like a cancer until the next thing you know, you're living in an apartment with a tent and you're divorced. Because once that word and concept is introduced in a marriage, it starts to erode the marriage. And civil war is like that for me. I think it's an extremely dangerous comparison to make, to say people are so upset we're going to have a civil war. Even during Vietnam, they didn't say that. Everybody knew what the violence and what the issue was about, and they could see it, and they knew that in a sense, the Vietnam War was a perfect example of what happens when a government runs amok. So you've got people now writing books about whether we're going to have one, if we could have one, whether the country is different than it was in the 1840s, and all of this silliness. While this is going on, it seems accurate to say that we're trapped in an escalating spiral of incivility. And I don't know, and this is where I really struggle with this podcast, because I don't know whether to go one direction and say this is give you a bunch of examples of incivility, or whether I should just go in another direction and just simply say I think it is a lack of manners, I think it's a lack of education, I think it's drunkenness and drug addiction and stupidity. And I think part of it is that every need or want is handled for the most part in this country by some government agency, and you can't do or solve any problem without involving a government agency. And I think adult, full adult people probably wouldn't be able to survive if there was no government. I think that's a terrible situation. I don't think that's a good situation. So that's the direction I was going to go in. And then I also think that it's accurate to say that, we're in this situation where we lose an election and people throw tantrums and they spread awful rumors and they try to destroy people that won. They don't understand the Electoral College. They want to tear down the institutions that they think made it impossible for them to win, even though those institutions were put there for a reason. We don't elect presidents in this country by popular vote. It doesn't matter what the popular vote is. It never has. It's about the Electoral College. And you have Republicans running around wanting to slave the Electoral College to the popular vote to essentially obviate it without thinking about what the reason for it was. It was an afterthought. Really? So was the Supreme Court, I guess. So should we get rid of the Supreme Court as well? Or we should have a 200-person Supreme Court. All these crazy ideas, which for me are building a quote-unquote democratic infrastructure onto an elegant structure of government that is a republic. And so becoming more democratic in a republic really may not be a very good idea, because what it seems to me is what they want is they want the popular will to be obeyed. And the whole idea of a republic is to elect people who make decisions and run the government under the sovereign of the people, not that the people's will be done every time they want something. The idea is you hire people to run things and make decisions and use their brains and their willingness to serve the sovereign, meaning the people, to solve problems. And sometimes things that get done are things that we don't want done. Roosevelt had to force lend-lease on the American people, and it was important because that's probably the thing that saved the world from Nazi Germany, which everyone seems to be concerned about fascism. If it weren't for lend-lease, the Russians would have been defeated in 1941. If it weren't for lend-lease, the great aircraft carrier known as Great Britain would have been overtaken by the Germans probably by the end of the summer of 1940. So Lend-Lease, if you look it up, was a very important tool to help our allies and yet keep us out of the war, because nobody in World War II wanted to be involved in World War II. Maybe they had good reasons for it, but what happened is the systems of the government worked to get us on a footing where we could save ourselves. And if we'd have taken the people's direction, well, we would be speaking German today. Welcome to the man in the high castle, right? And so we're in this situation where people are using the institutions of government to attack and destroy enemies, death by a thousand cuts. One party does it, and then when they're out of power, the other party does it, campaigning on rhetorical ideas rather than specific plans for the future, dividing people with horrible emotional rhetoric and actions, and everything is political, and it makes life really a bummer. It makes life pretty much suck. Meanwhile, what the government is doing is borrowing and spending, printing more money, refusing to consider and to address or to consider to address real problems, pushing more and more of the supporters for a particular point of view into the street to demand their point of view be heard. And that's going to lead to thuggery. And the next thing you know is we're going to have socialists and Nazis riding around in trucks boiling out into street fights. And we have. And that ought to concern everyone. And the ideas that are being thrown out as things we should do don't make any sense. Getting rid of the Electoral College. Every Democrat wants to get rid of the Electoral College until one of their people is elected because of it. And then it'll be this hallowed institution. We want to give everybody a universal income, but we don't even want to think about what the cost is going to be. We want to build a giant wall on the border, but we don't think about what the cost is going to be or how to solve the immigration problem with legislation. We want to give everybody free medical insurance and education, right? We want to get rid of the big companies because they're bad and they're horrible people. And so we want to get, you know, destroy the productive elements of the American economy. We want to tear down all the walls and let anyone in. You know, that's a complete opposite from building a wall. We want free drugs, and then, you know, we want our free drugs and our free medical treatment, and then we demand that something be done about drug addicts, so they're sent to these, you know, they're sent to these treatment centers that don't do anything. I could go on, but you get the idea. It's very depressing. When you ask Republicans to defend certain policies of Trump, they're just as likely to say, well, it's better than Hillary, as they are to say anything else, which means they don't have any idea what Trump is doing. They just didn't want Hillary, and so that's their go-to argument. When you ask Democrats what their actual plan is, I hate to say this, but it's usually free stuff, and how much it costs doesn't really matter. Ask people where Montana is, and they don't know unless they live there, much less Saudi Arabia. And yet we're all upset about Saudi Arabia. We don't know anything about Saudi Arabia or the Middle East or Latin America or anything else. Ask people when the Civil War was in history. Most of them can't tell you. It is most often the question that people get wrong in American history. People think it was in 1918, 1740. They don't even know. People can either quote the U.S. Constitution chapter and verse, but they don't have any knowledge of contextual jurisprudence or history over the last 200 years, because if they did, then they would be saying, well, it's a living document. Virtually all of the Supreme Court justices, even the most conservative, considered the document to be flexible. That was the whole point of the U.S. Constitution. But you had these people who are, quote, constitutional scholars, which means they read a bunch of books and watched videos on how to, quote, unquote, teach the Constitution, but they don't know anything about the Constitution because they don't understand law. You know, they haven't learned, they're not lawyers. And I'm not saying that you have to be a lawyer to understand the Constitution, but there's more to it than just reading the words on the paper and understanding what those things mean. Or you have people that think the Constitution, as I said earlier, is just some stupid thing that nobody should pay any attention to anyway. Most people can only name one or two past presidents and congresses, but they don't know any history of their country and the world beyond that. I don't think it's always been this way. You know, the founders read a lot of classical literature. Maybe the plebeians in the streets really didn't, but my sense is that the two books, you know, most people had two or three books, the Bible and some kind of Greek literature and a couple of other books. And those were, you know, pretty good. If you just read classical literature, you had a pretty good understanding of history up to the present time frame back in 1760. And yet today, nobody even knows anything about Western history. And yet everybody has an opinion about free trade and the UN and Imperial America and how these things should be negotiated. And this is what we should do. And we just got to get rid of this and get rid of that. And there's so much more to these issues. And I've talked about this a lot, and it just doesn't sink into people. So it boils down, in my view, to the things I want from government are the right things. And I don't care if there's too much government power as long as it's used for the things that I want. And I don't think that needs to be qualified, because I think that's pretty obvious. So no, we could not recreate a republic with limited powers and guarantees of individual liberty because I don't think people have the wits or experience or knowledge to do so. And that is the crux of the concern about the future. And I'm just going to close this because this is kind of on this subject of idiocracy versus civil war. I don't have a problem with something new. I don't have a problem with a new president or another political party being in charge or a new political party or anything else. I have no doubt that eventually it's coming, but I'm concerned about what new thing is coming. And I'll just close with Hayek, who proposed the idea. Well, he didn't actually say this, because the truth is, it is true that fascism is a middle ground between capitalism and socialism. It was not the right wing in Germany and Italy when it emerged. It was a middle ground, third way type idea of government. And Hayek, though, said that fascism emerges only when the government power has been concentrated to solve problems that the old government couldn't solve. So you go from a Democrat government that can't solve any problems to a concentrated type of government that has no limits to its power to quote unquote solve the problems. And then you get fascism. And if you, I mean, I have a couple of podcasts about this. If you go find them and search Germany or German fascism, and it happened in Italy too, the system of government was broken down. The countervailing powers of government were broken down in Germany well before the fascists became powerful. In fact, that was the path to power. They did it to themselves. The Weimar Republic, which were the conservatives, slowly but surely broke down the barriers to one person taking over and running things. It also was, I think, because people forgot how to solve problems because the government was supposed to solve problems. These days, people like to call Trump a fascist. They like to call Republicans fascist. But more than likely, fascism in this country will come as a middle ground between angry radical leftists and white social identity rightists with sclerotic moderate conservatives seeking to find a compromise between the two and creating a situation where a future American dictator would be able to solve problems that might arise from incivility or mob behavior or even boorish and loutish behavior. You know, communists believe that socialism and fascism are preconditions to communism. So they're perfectly okay with fascism and socialism first because they know this. So by simply asking for the power to solve these kinds of problems that have been created and chaos as part of a tool to create this state of communism, it allows a future president to simply exercise the power and ask questions later. And this is why we should be worried that people are out there touting this idea that we're going to have an American Civil War to the extent that people are dreaming about it now. Because there isn't going to be another American Civil War. If people keep acting this way, I can tell you that this president or a future president, Republican or Democrat, is just not going to be able to put up with it. And if they do, then the guy after them will address it and they will put it down before it reaches a critical point. I hate to say it, but Kent State is a good example of it. And that was a mistake, but that was an example of the extreme power at the point of a gun of government to keep order, especially if there's some kind of crisis, a revolt, an existential threat, something to that effect. Any kind of threat to law and order is going to be put down very swiftly and efficiently by the United States federal government and the state governments. I'll give you an example. People just don't realize that Antifa or some crazy right-wing group thinks they can do whatever they want. When I went to the pipeline protest, I've been talking about this. You know, you have to go through checkpoints. You go through checkpoints all the time down in America's border regions where there are armed National Guard troops or armed, federal border force troops, basically. And you have nowhere to go. You can't turn around. You have to go through the checkpoints. So the tools are in place for them to really crack down on people if they want to. And you people that think that you're just going to do whatever you want, I'm telling you, you don't want to go there. Because what we need to do is strengthen our Republican institutions by being better citizens, by actually reserving judgment until we learn more, by being willing to listen to each other, by voting and working to elect delegates who have high integrity, and by respecting each other and our rights as citizens. We have to grow up. I hate to say it that way, but if we don't, we're not going anywhere. Now, in terms of closing this podcast, which has been kind of weird, I'm just going to say, as I said, we're dealing with a lot of Marxist social theory ideas about self-criticism and reporting of people who disagree and stopping people from expressing their ideas, especially about flashpoint issues like guns and, people on the border, immigration, and things that they pick, and respecting women and so forth. And the end result is just a lot of chaos because people get confused about what their role is and they don't understand that you do have the right to have an opinion about guns and you do have the right to say, I don't believe this woman that testified, and you do have the right to say, I think the border should be secure or I think people should be just let in. You have a right to your ideas and opinions. And you should not be stopped for that. And when people and government starts doing that, it starts creating chaos. And then you get these people who say, you know what, we're going to keep order and the ends justify the means. And that's that. This is a very dangerous situation that we have put ourselves in. The government hasn't done this. We've done it by asking the government to be more and more powerful. Personally, I think people who support these methods might be surprised on election night, but then again, they might not be. And then the shoe will be on the other foot. Everyone, representatives, presidents, people in the media, commentators, people, I guess, need to take a step back and think about what ignorant outbursts, violence, screaming and yelling and throwing things, insults and demands will eventually lead to. Certainly, this president is not going to stop doing that. He has become a master of manipulating people through going cross-cutting against the media's attacks on him constantly and by people shock when someone actually disagrees with them. We have to be really careful that we don't get into a situation where there is an excessive civil crackdown. Again, Lincoln himself was a virtual dictator. Legality will be decided by what is necessary because we just can't have it. And we now have a federal government and state governments that are powerful enough to be able to make those kinds of decisions. I think a lot of these problems we're having right now are transitory. I think a lot of these problems that we have right now can be solved by markets and by technology. If we have the courage to try it, I don't see many people who share my philosophy of government and economics, which is basically get the hell out of my business and basically use market forces to solve problems and use tools in the market to solve problems. Nobody wants to do that, and I guess that's okay. I'm not going to try to get people to do that because I think we are going to go through a crisis because of the situation that we're in. Whether we go one way or go another remains to be seen. But I will tell you, 100 years ago, most people never even thought of the government. And these days, it comes up in every conversation. You know, what they're doing, the latest tweet, what other nonsense has happened in Washington, it comes up constantly. I mean, I suppose in the great, you know, where I live in the Midwest, there are people who live day to day that don't pay any attention to what is going on, but it comes up in business, it comes up in friendly conversation, and I don't think it should, because I think when the government is that powerful that it comes up in every single thing that happens, then you've got a problem. And what I am hoping for, as I said, that we reach a point where we can use markets and technology to disrupt this overbearing government and start to pare it back and get it cheaper and get it to be more efficient. We just have to stop arguing and maybe we can solve some problems. Back to the basics, people. One of the things that's coming up is trade protection, and whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing, it's essentially a tax on foreign goods, and they are retaliating. And so companies are bringing manufacturing back to the United States, or they're looking for American manufacturing. And the thing that happens when companies bring manufacturing back to the U.S., they start to wonder what they were doing in the first place. So DepoStar is an American design, engineering, and manufacturing company. They do great work, and they can help you solve that problem. Here's what you do. Visit their website at DepoStar.com, DepoStar.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page of the BobDavisPodcast.com that says DepoStar. Okay, thanks for subscribing and listening to the Bob Davis Podcast right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Of course, we're on iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. I really appreciate when I post a podcast link. I appreciate you guys sharing on Facebook, and I also appreciate the visits to thebobdavispodcast.com. Appreciate your donations as well for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 770. Some stuff to think about midweek.